All right, everyone. So I would like to talk to you guys about the tide that is turning against Israel. There is a political analyst by the name of Michael Lang, and this guy thoroughly studied the political demographics of New York City, and he was able to predict with incredible accuracy the election results for Zohran Mamdani, and he has another prediction for us, and that is that the time is coming wherein it will not be politically advantageous for a politician to take AIPAC money. I don't think a 2028 presidential candidate can win a Democratic primary by taking AIPAC money. So the time is coming when it will no longer be politically advantageous to be pro-Israel. And you are already seeing various politicians coming out and saying, I don't take AIPAC money.
A little bit ago, you did an interview, Higher Learning, and the question of AIPAC came up.
Oh, yeah.
And like, it wasn't really necessarily a question of AIPAC.
No, it was just a random, and thought about AIPAC, I've never received any money from AIPAC.
I'm not taking AIPAC money. This is a selling point. Why is this a selling point? Because the tide is turning against Israel.
Yeah. AIPAC, yeah. DMFI, the Israel lobby at large, this has become a big conversation.
Yeah, I know
And someone like myself, and I think at this point, a broad majority of Democrats are saying, we don't want candidates who are taking money from AIPAC.
Yeah.
We don't want candidates who are beholden to the Israel lobby. How do you think about AIPAC now? And maybe someone like Seth Moulton, who said, I want to return this money. I'm not taking it anymore. Yeah. How do you think that AIPAC should be involved or shouldn't be involved?
Well, they've never been involved with me. I've never received a dollar from them in my entire political career. So,
because Benjamin Netanyahu's disastrous war has made the people of Israel and Jewish people all over the world less safe as a result. And to answer your last question, no, I will not be accepting money from AIPAC in this race.
Zero. I have never taken a dollar from AIPAC in my entire political career. In fact, early on, shortly after I won my primary, and there's reporting on this, AIPAC approached me offering tons of super PAC money. I turned them down.
I pledge to take no money from AIPAC or any other lobbyists or any corporations.
Congressman, you announced on Thursday that you're no longer going to accept donations from AIPAC.
I finally decided that I just cannot accept contributions from an organization whose mission is to support the current government in Israel.
AIPAC is one of probably two groups that's doing a very, unfortunately, effective job in taking big money and bringing it to primaries where you can buy elections for less. We need to make their money toxic, that if you're getting money from them, you should maybe consider voting against the folks that are taking this big money in these races. And I think we all need to work together to make sure that they don't just come in and buy elections.
Will you take AIPAC money or have you taken AIPAC money?
I'm not certain if I've taken it or not. I've been in office 10 years. It doesn't jump out at me as I'm taking it. But I think the most important part
is... will you for this race?
I have no idea. I haven't even thought about it. I've only been in 3 days. But
okay, come on, Jeff. You have to... This is like there's a genocide going on right now, and to not know if you're going to be beholden to the Israeli lobby is to me is not something that should take time to think about, because you started off this interview with us talking about your faith.
I think that's exactly what I've done. That's a track record. I mean, I think that's the separation factor.
So will you take AIPAC money in this race?
I have no idea. I haven't even thought about it.
AIPAC just poured money into a series of ads in my district calling me a liar for speaking out about the truth in Gaza. Let's show AIPAC and the special interests what the people can do in this country. AIPAC is attacking me because I choose to fight for peace and because you stand with me. Big money is lying about me because they can't buy me, because they can't buy us.
And this is not just a phenomenon that is taking place in the Democratic faction. This is happening in the conservative, right-wing, Republican faction as well.
I don't have the track record of taking money from AIPAC and then putting America last and putting foreign countries first. Our opponents are establishment individuals who have an unimpeachable history of putting our country last and selling off our sovereignty to the lowest bidder, often for $7,000 a tweet. Byron doesn't just take money from AIPAC. He says he's going to take money from AIPAC.
Mr. Lang is asked the question, are we seeing it from more hard right candidates as well? To which Mr. Lang says, yes, this isn't limited to the progressive base. People on the right are turning away from Israel as well, especially when they're watching Israel's killing of civilians in Gaza and Netanyahu's aggressive actions.
I would never accept donation from any sort of foreign entity or citizen. We need to put Connecticut residents first and American citizens first, not any interest of any other foreign country first. Doesn't matter what that country is. I would never take any sort of resources or support from any other foreign country or entity whatsoever.
You never took APAC money?
I did not. I refused those funds.
How did that go for you?
I just, you know.
Well, I guess you ultimately got blackmailed.
I didn't become attorney general.
No.
But I may be the only Republican in Congress who hasn't done homework for APAC. And it's just what it is. It's conditioning. They want you to do something very simple and benign, and you know, for them, they don't really grade your term paper. They just want to know that you'll do something for them, and if you'll do something for them as a candidate, you're more likely to do something for them as a congressman when you get in there.
And I think that this is a very astute observation, because just look around you. Look at what's happening in America and in the Western world when it comes to political discourse on Israel. The majority of people do not like Israel, and this will translate into America's foreign policy when it comes to Israel. Now, a lot of people will doubt this, and they will say, no, no, what are you talking about? America will always support Israel. America will go to war for Israel. Ask yourself this question, guys. Ask yourself this very, very simple question. If 90%, if 85% of the American people all said, we want to go to war against Iran for the cause of Israel, do you think America would be hesitating to go to a major conventional war against Iran for the sake of Israel? America wouldn't hesitate. They would be in the trenches tomorrow if that were the case, but that has not happened. And we watched Israel getting bombed, and America did not enter a major conventional war against Iran to save Israel. So really what we are seeing is the tide turning against the Jewish state. And Mr. Lang makes a very interesting observation. He says that the electoral victory for Mr. Mamdani is a sign of this massive political shift against Israel in the United States. And I think that this is a very astute observation, given the fact that here was Mr. Mamdani. He was criticizing Israel out in the open. He was openly pro-Palestine. And here he was, this Muslim guy, running for mayor of the most Jewish city in America, the most Jewish city in the world outside of Israel. And he wins. He wins the election. What does this tell us? It tells us that the shift against Israel is taking place. And so recently, Mr. Lang did an interview with the Israeli newspaper Haaretz, and I would like to read to you guys some excerpts from this written interview. So Mr. Lang is asked the question, why didn't the attacks over his Gaza stance hurt Mamdani? So he's referring to the fact that Andrew Cuomo was attacking Mamdani over his criticism of Israel. And so Haaretz is asking this Lang guy, well, why didn't this criticism hurt Mamdani? And Mr. Lang says, during the first debate, when candidates were asked where they would visit first, all of them answered Israel. Only Mamdani said he would stay in New York and meet Jewish voters where they are. And I remember this. There is a video that you can watch, and I remember this video went viral, of all these Democratic candidates for mayor of New York City in a room, and they're all doing this whole panel debate. And all these candidates are asked the same question. Which country would you visit if you become mayor of New York City? And all these candidates, with the exception of Mr. Mamdani, give the same answer. Well, I would visit Israel. I would visit Israel.
The first foreign visit by a mayor of New York is always considered significant. Where would you go first? Left to right, Ms. Adams.
First visit, I would visit the Holy Land.
Mr. Cuomo?
Given the hostility and the anti-Semitism that has been shown in New York, I would go to Israel.
Mr. Tilson, where would you go?
Yeah, I'd make my fourth trip to Israel, followed by my fifth trip to Ukraine, two of our greatest allies fighting on the front lines of the global war on terror.
Mr. Mamdani.
I would stay in New York City. My plans are to address New Yorkers across the five boroughs and focus on that.
Mr. Mamdani, can I just jump in? Would you visit Israel?
No,
as mayor?
I will be doing, as the mayor, I'll be standing up for Jewish New Yorkers, and I'll be meeting them wherever they are across the five boroughs, whether that's in their synagogues and temples or at their homes or at the subway platform, because ultimately we need to focus on delivering on their concerns.
And just yes or no, do you believe in a Jewish state of Israel?
I believe Israel has the right to exist.
Not as
a Jewish state?
Notice.
As a state with equal rights.
He won't say it has a right to exist as a Jewish state.
His answer was no. He won't visit Israel.
That's what he was trying to say. Unlike you, I answer questions very directly.
My goal would be to take my first trip to Israel. My wife's life work in this area means a lot to our family.
As if all these politicians just organically decided that they really, really want to visit Israel. And only Mamdani said, no, I would stay right here in New York City. And if the Jewish community in New York City has an issue, I would gladly discuss it with them. And that made Mr. Mamdani look real and authentic. And these other candidates really just appeared fake and inauthentic, and they appeared plastic. They appeared like plastic, and they really exposed themselves as just receivers of pro-Israel lobby money, and they really just showed that they were just giving the answer that their donors wanted to hear. So Mr. Mamdani came across as authentic, and this really helped him, even with people who weren't really that at all concerned with the Israel-Palestine issue. And Mr. Lange goes on to say, I can't tell you how many voters from whom Palestinian rights were not their number one issue, but who watched that exchange and resonated with it. So you had people who care somewhat about the Palestine issue, but it's not their main priority when it comes to voting for the mayor of New York City. And they saw that exchange, and they said, Mr. Mamdani looks authentic. And Mr. Mamdani said, no, I wouldn't go to Israel. I wouldn't go to really any country for that matter. I would just stay here in New York City. And instead of just letting it go, instead of the interviewer just letting the answer go and just leaving it at that, no. The interviewer presses Mamdani on the issue and says, okay, so what? Do you believe Israel has a right to exist? Yeah, as a country with equal rights. And so just by saying, I would stay here in New York City, you trigger the Zionistic sentiments of the people in the political class to say, do you believe Israel has a right to exist? As if it's quite obvious why that question was asked in the first place. That question wasn't asked to receive an authentic answer. That question was asked so that the political candidates would say Israel. That's the only purpose for that question. And so that's why Mr. Mamdani was pressed on the issue. And that made Mr. Mamdani shine even brighter. And that made people like Cuomo just look a lot faker, because Mr. Cuomo was butting in on the discussion. And he said, oh, you heard him already. He said he would not visit Israel. As if that was such a terrible thing to say for someone running for a city that doesn't even exist in Israel. So people saw that and they said, you know what? This Mamdani guy, he's authentic. And that made Mr. Mamdani really shine. Mr. Lange has asked the question, did the atmosphere around the Gaza protests help Mamdani? And Mr. Lange says, Mamdani didn't run on it. Mr. Mamdani did not run on the Palestinian issue. But Cuomo and Adams used it to attack him. So here was Cuomo trying to paint Mr. Mamdani as being an enemy of Israel, and he was trying to make it out as if Mr. Mamdani becomes mayor of New York City, it's going to be a threat to the Jewish community in New York City. That's why you guys should vote for me, because I'm going to be the protector of the Jews against this evil Muslim guy, this evil Mamdani. And so Cuomo was really insisting on attacking Mamdani over his pro-Palestine sentiment. And this did not help Cuomo, and it did not hurt Mamdani. It actually backfired on Cuomo, because people were wondering to themselves, why is this Cuomo guy so obsessed over this Israel issue? Why does he continue to attack Mamdani? Because he's critical of Israel. Mr. Cuomo seems pretty obsessed over a country that has nothing to do with New York City and nothing to do with the local affairs of this city. And so it backfired on Cuomo. And this is what Mr. Lang says in the interview. And he says, overall, it backfired. They didn't anticipate that elements of the non-hardcore Zionist electorate, which is increasingly in line with Mamdani, also by deliberately raising the salience of that issue, they appeared obsessed with a non-local issue. Now, this really reminds me of the political phenomenon that is really massive in American society right now, and that is America first. People are saying America first, not Israel first. And make no mistake about it, when people say they are America first and they are sincere about it, what they are actually saying is to hell with Israel. This is something that is really it's a reality that not a whole lot of people are coming to grips with. You have people who think that the American-Israeli relationship will never die. But once you see people being critical of Israel on the right, you know the end of Israel is coming, because being critical of Israel was something that was expected on the left side. It was expected from the left wing. It was expected from Democrats. But now we're seeing this taking place in the right wing faction of America. And this is something that truly bespeaks the coming end of Israel. And you really can't blame people for being sick and tired of Israel, especially given the fact that Israel has done so many atrocities on Palestinian civilians. And we are hearing all sorts of horror stories coming out of Gaza, all sorts of horror stories coming out of Israel. We're hearing stories about Palestinian men being raped by Israeli officers. There is a story that you can read about in which Israeli officers raped a Palestinian man with their M16 rifles. They sodomized this man with M16 rifles. And there is another story that you can read about in which Israeli officers tied a Palestinian man to a toilet seat, and then they used a dog to sodomize this Palestinian man. They had a dog mount and sodomize this man as a form of torture. And you see just this evil sadism. You read the stories about Israeli soldiers sniping toddlers, shooting toddlers in the head, in the chest, shooting boys in the testicles, killing children for fun, laughing about murdering civilians. You see all of this evil, and then you see the pro-Israel side, and you see just how much of a cult the pro-Israel faction really is. And it's really quite in the open. It's very much so in the open. It's very explicit. It's very conspicuous. And the pro-Israel side is becoming more and more cultic. For example, one of the biggest faces in the pro-Israel movement, Mr. Musab Hassan Youssef, recently declared inside of a synagogue in front of a large Jewish congregation that Israel is God. And I'm not making this up. I'm not exaggerating anything he said. He actually said this. He said, Israel is God, and whoever refuses to support Israel will be killed.
And Israel is not a political entity. You need to understand this. Israel is an evolution. Israel is earth. Israel doesn't know political borders. Just look at the roots of Israel worldwide. Wherever you go, there is Israel. Israel is God. You fight with Israel, you are fighting with the most powerful authority of the universe. Do I need to say it clearer? And I try not to get to the business of God. But this is what it is. If you don't accept it, you are in the face of a certain destruction. What's happening in Gaza can be repeated everywhere else.
We sit here and criticize Muslims for saying things like, well, whoever refuses to become a Muslim should be killed, or whoever leaves Islam should be killed in a Sharia state. But here is this pro-Israel fanatic, and not just any pro-Israel activist. This is one of the biggest faces for the Hasbarist apparatus. This is one of the biggest faces for Israel's propaganda machine, Mr. Musab Hassan Youssef, declaring that not only is Israel God, but that whoever refuses to worship this God will be murdered, will be exterminated. I mean, this is co-Sharia law in its most clearest form. Now, the pro-Israel activists want you to obsess over Sharia law, and they'll say things like, well, you know, these Muslims in America, they're going to bring Sharia law to America. They're going to try to make America into an Islamic state, and they want to impose Sharia law on people, etc., etc., but they don't want you to talk about co-Sharia law, the agenda to impose pro-Israel fanaticism on people. That's what these people want to do. They want to force people to worship Israel. They want to force people to be pro-Israel. And now you have these Christian Zionists really trying to theologically and spiritually pressure people into revering Israel and into embracing Israel as something that is required for one's salvation. Yes. For example, I recently saw the daughter of John Hagee stating that supporting Israel is really a sacrament for Christian Zionists. She says that supporting Israel is no different from taking communion.
The Bible says specifically, salvation is from the Jews. What does that mean? That means without the Jewish people, without the Jewish line, the Gentiles like me don't have a shot at salvation. Then you, the Gentile, need to bless the Jew in actual things. Standing with Israel, standing with the Jewish people, combating anti-Semitism is not political. To the members of Christians United for Israel, this is simply an elemental practice of our faith. It is as sacerdotal as taking communion.
So what these pro-Israel Christians have done is they have made Israel into a sacrament. They have made supporting Israel into something that is required for one's salvation. Now, these are the same people who will come out and say things like, oh, well, all you need is Jesus. I don't need a church for salvation. I don't need the Eucharist for salvation. I don't need confession for salvation. And they'll bash Catholics and Eastern Orthodox Christians for having sacraments. And they'll say, well, you know, the Catholics and the Eastern Orthodox, they believe that they need confession and the Eucharist for salvation. Well, we don't believe that. We believe that all you need is Jesus. Jesus plus nothing. But these are the same people who will turn around and say, well, you need to support Israel. You don't need a church. You don't need the Eucharist. You don't need confession. But you do need to support Israel, and if you don't support Israel, you're going to hell. And this lady, John Hagee's daughter, she says that for us, supporting Israel is just like taking communion. So they have rejected the Eucharist, and they have made Israel into their Eucharist. And not only this, Catholics and Eastern Orthodox Christians say that the Eucharist is the actual flesh of Christ, and they say that the wine inside of the cup becomes the literal blood of Jesus. And these pro-Israel Christians will mock at this and they'll scoff at this and they'll say, ha ha, all these Catholics and these Eastern Orthodox Christians, you know, they believe that they're really consuming the blood and the flesh of Christ. This is just preposterous and superstition. And yet you have these Zionistic Christians making being pro-Israel a requirement for salvation. And not only this, but they also make supporting Israel's slaughter of the Palestinians into something that is required for salvation. You have to support the butchering of Palestinians. You have to support the shedding of Palestinian blood in order to have salvation. Now you'll say, no, Ted, we don't really believe that. You're crazy. You're making things up. No, no, no. Because Israel has slaughtered at least tens of thousands of Palestinian civilians. Israeli soldiers have sniped untold numbers of Palestinian civilians. Israeli soldiers have sniped children. Israeli soldiers have raped men. Israeli soldiers have sodomized men, just like the demonic people in Sodom and Gomorrah. And yet, if I say, hey, I don't support Israel because of the evils that Israel is doing, because of the murderousness, and because of the sodomitical behavior of Israel, the Christian Zionist will say, well, you must support Israel anyway, or else you're not going to have salvation. In other words, I have to support male-on-male rape and mass murder because these crimes are done by Israel. And if I do not support these evils, then I am going to hell. I am hellbound. So the Christian Zionist movement is one that believes in mass human sacrifice. This is like if I were to go to Mesoamerica, and if I were to go to the Aztec city of Tenochtitlan and say, listen, I don't support this mass human sacrifice that you guys are doing. Oh, the Aztec priest, I mean, they obviously would kill me, let's be real here, but the Aztec priest would say, this person is a blasphemer. Now, if I go to these Hagiites, if I go to these Kufi, pro-Israel fanatical Christians and say, listen, I don't support this mass murder of Palestinians, they would say, well, you're messing with the God of the Bible. You're messing with the God of Israel. In fact, there is a video of one of the bigger pro-Israel evangelical pastors, Jack Hibbs, condemning Joe Biden for trying to get Israel to agree to a ceasefire. And Mr. Jack Hibbs says, oh, they want to get Israel to do a ceasefire. America is messing with the God of Israel.
As the United States, under the Biden administration, makes a decision to withhold the ability for Israel to defend itself, Tony, this causes me to have a little bit of a tinge of fear for this reason. We are actually insulting God by hamstringing his own people, Israel. You don't mess with Israel. In a time like this, we're seeing this administration make incredibly dangerous decisions. Now, to the commoner, I guess it's not so dangerous. But to those of us who know the Bible, to realize that we are tampering with Israel's ability to defend itself, well, Tony, that is just poking the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob right in the eye. And it's not going to go well if we stay on this track of policy.
So God doesn't want a ceasefire? God doesn't want peace? Does not Jesus Christ say, blessed are the peacemakers? Does not Jesus Christ say that? And yet you guys don't want peace. You guys want slaughter. You guys want mass murder. You guys want to greenlight Israel to continue to do its crimes. This really just exposes you people as satanic. It exposes you people for what you truly are, and that is sons of Belial and agents of the diabolical. Really, acolytes of Antichrist, because Israel is Antichrist. You can read all these stories about how these fanatical Jewish settlers are beginning to expand into the Christian areas of the West Bank. Yes, you can read about the most Christian area of the West Bank, Bethlehem. You can read about the Bethlehem area, which is really the oldest Christian region on earth. And you can read about how these fanatical Jewish settlers are beginning to expand into the Bethlehem area, how they are beginning to expand in the area of Beit Sahur, where my father was born, actually. And Beit Sahur is a Christian area. It's a predominantly Christian area, and these Jewish fanatics are beginning to expand in this area, and they are planning on building around 3,000 Jewish settler homes in the Christian area of Beit Sahur. So they are showing their Antichrist spirit, and the pro-Israel Christian fanatics, they want us to support this. They want us to embrace this. And if Palestinian Christians object, well, those Palestinian Christians will simply be deemed as not being Christian. Whereas some American guy who believes in this idea of revering Israel, well, that guy is a real Christian. But this Palestinian Christian whose ancestors were Christians for thousands of years, that guy's not a real Christian. So people are seeing all of this lunacy and they're turning against it. They're seeing the cult of Israel, the cult of the worship of Israel, and they're turning against it. And after decades of being brainwashed to be pro-Israel, people are rebelling against this. And so this tide is turning against Israel, and it's quite clear to see. And something that really acted as the canary in the coal mine, so to speak, for this phenomenon was the electoral victory of Zohran Mamdani. You had this Muslim guy openly bashing Israel and openly being pro-Palestine when, as mayor of New York City, he won the election to be the mayor of the most Jewish city in America, which means being pro-Israel is no longer a necessity to win a major election. That's what that means. Before, in the politics of New York City, you had to be pro-Israel. That's why all these political candidates said, well, the first country I would visit as mayor of New York would be Israel. That's why all these candidates said that. Because that was what was expected of them to say. But Mr. Mamdani, seeing the future and really being aware of the political shift that is occurring and really being aware of the political zeitgeist, said, no, I'm going to stay here in New York City, which was an astute and smart answer. And so you see this shift taking place against Israel in the online spaces, and what we are witnessing is the online world translating into the real world. And that translation was seen, albeit in an inchoate stage, in the electoral victory of Zohran Mamdani. But the anti-Israel sentiment online is massive, and it reflects this shift against Israel. And it makes you wonder, if America is so diehard pro-Israel, if the American government is so diehard pro-Israel, why isn't the United States government getting Google to restrict the spread of anti-Israel videos on YouTube? Why are anti-Israel videos on YouTube more popular than pro-Israel videos? Why are anti-Israel voices on YouTube more popular than pro-Israel voices? And if the United States government, if Washington, is so diehard pro-Israel, why isn't Washington ordering Google to restrict the spreading of anti-Israel videos on Google and on YouTube? Why? Now you would say, well, because we have freedom of speech. Bullshit! That is such utter horseshit. Go read about the fact that Google, under the orders of the U.S. government, has restricted certain websites because those websites were deemed as being sympathetic for the Kremlin, as being sympathetic towards Russia. Go read about the fact that the Biden administration ordered Twitter to restrict certain accounts for posting articles or making posts about Hunter Biden's laptop. YouTube used to penalize channels for questioning the 2020 election results. YouTube used to penalize channels for questioning the COVID vaccine. And this was all done at the behest of the United States government. So why don't we see the U.S. government utilizing the same power against influencers and against YouTube channels that are critical of Israel? And I would say that this is an important question. I would say that this is a question that is quite telling, because the government does have the power to restrict anti-Israel channels, but it's not imposing that power. It's not utilizing that authority. Why not? And I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe the United States government wants anti-Israel material to spread, because America is priming us for when America throws Israel under the bus. And what do we see happening before our eyes? We see America betraying an ally, the Kurds. Yes, America for many years praised the Kurds. Oh, the Kurds are helping us in our fight against ISIS. Well, after years of such talk, what did America just do? America just threw the Kurds under the bus. Because look at what happened just recently. The Turkish military backed the Syrian Revolutionary Military in taking entire swaths of Kurdish territory in northern Syria, completely betraying the Kurds for the sake of Turkey, because America wants Turkey to become this massive power in the Middle East. America wants Turkey to dominate the Middle East because America wants to use Turkey to counter Russia and China in the Middle East. And the most powerful country in the Middle East, after Israel, is Turkey. And so America wants to unite the Muslim world under Turkey. Now, remember what the Trump administration said in its foreign policy document. It said that America aligns with countries that want to go back to their former glory. And it was specifically talking about Germany, but there is another country that wants to revive its former glory, and that is Turkey. Turkey wants to revive the Ottoman Empire. And in order to revive the Ottoman Empire, Turkey would have to dominate the Middle East because the Ottoman Empire dominated the Middle East. And so you can't unite the Middle East under Israel. The Middle East hates Israel. So the idea of uniting the Middle East against Russia and China under a Jewish state is just impractical and impossible. So how do you do this? How do you unite the Middle East for the cause of NATO against Russia? Well, you use Turkey. You use the most powerful Muslim country on earth, Turkey, a country that used to be an empire and that used to dominate the Middle East. And so that's what America is doing. Israel is seeing this and Israel is terrified. And Israel is saying, no, 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 we have to be the most powerful country in the Middle East. And America is saying, well, sorry, Israel, the Middle East hates you. And the idea of uniting the Middle East for America's interest under Israel is just something that is not viable. But what is viable is the idea of uniting the Middle East under Turkey. So we're just going to allow Turkey to take over Syria. And Syria has a border with Israel. So Israel right now is facing a revived Turkish Empire smack right on its border. And America doesn't care. Israel has complained about the American representative in Syria, Tom Barak. And Israel has said, well, Mr. Barak is working more for the interest of Turkey than for the interest of Israel. And America has said, yes, tough luck. So what? This is America's policy. And so America is working more so for the interest of Turkey than it is for the interest of Israel. Now, Turkey is looking at Syria and Turkey is saying, well, we can't really control Syria if Syria is going to be this fragmented country. And you had what was effectively a Kurdish state dominating northern Syria. And Turkey said, okay, well, we can't have this united Syria under Turkish rule if you have this Kurdish, this de facto Kurdish power ruling over a chunk of Syria. We can't have that. And so America said, okay, well, we give you the green light to enable the Syrian military to retake that territory or to take that territory from the Kurds. And that's exactly what happened. Israel objected to this. Israel said, no, 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 allow the Kurds to remain there. Allow the Kurds to have their de facto independence. Because if those people are in power in northern Syria, Israel could use them as a proxy against a Turkish occupation in Syria. But America said, no, allow Turkey to enable the Syrians to take entire swaths of Kurdish territory. So the demands, the requests, the complaints of Israel were ignored. So we're already seeing America giving the cold shoulder to Israel and empowering Israel's biggest existential threat, and that is Turkey. So America is basically saying, okay, Israel, make way for the Turkish Empire, and it really doesn't matter if you're against it. It doesn't matter if you're sad about it. We're going to make this thing happen because Turkey is more geopolitically important than Israel. I've talked about this many times, but I'll say it here again. Turkey is more geopolitically important than Israel, simply given the fact that Turkey controls the Turkish Straits. Turkey controls extremely important geopolitical locations. The Turkish Straits. I'm talking about the Bosphorus and I'm talking about the Dardanelles. The Bosphorus allows for access from the Black Sea into the Sea of Marmara, and the Dardanelles allows for access from the Sea of Marmara into the Mediterranean Sea. The Black Sea and the Mediterranean Sea are two extremely important maritime territories. And if America is going to want to really counter Russia's freedom of movement in these major maritime territories, it's going to need Turkey. America cannot do this with Israel, but America can do this against Russia with Turkey as an ally. So America cannot afford to lose Turkey. So Israel is seeing this and they're saying, no, you're enabling this revived Turkish empire. And America's saying, yeah, because we need Turkey to go against Russia. And also, Turkey can be used as a massive pipeline by which to transport natural gas and oil from Central Asia and from Saudi Arabia into the rest of Europe. So if you look at a map, you will see, okay, you have Saudi Arabia, you have Iraq, and then you have Syria. Bordering with Syria is Turkey. Saudi Arabia is currently deepening its security ties with Turkey, and what they're planning is for Turkey to be a major pipeline by which to export Saudi Arabian oil to Europe. So oil could go from Saudi Arabia to, let's say, Syria into Turkey, and then from there into Bulgaria, into Greece, into the Balkans, from there into Central Europe, from there into the rest of Europe. And so Israel is trying to counter this. Israel is saying, no, we can be just as helpful. You could transport Saudi oil to Israel and then from there to Cyprus and then from Cyprus to Greece, but it's actually just a whole lot easier to transport Saudi oil to Turkey and then from there to the rest of Europe, because with Israel, you would have to transport that oil from Israel across a large swath of the Mediterranean into Cyprus, across another swath of the Mediterranean into Greece. It's just a lot easier to do it through Turkey because Turkey borders with the Balkans. Turkey borders with Bulgaria. And so you could go from Turkey directly to Bulgaria and you're right there in Europe. And so America really is saying, okay, Turkey is just a lot more helpful. With Turkey, we can unite the entire Muslim world. We can get countries, really massive Muslim countries like Indonesia, like Malaysia, to join forces with Turkey, and we can create this massive Islamist bloc led by Ankara. You can't do that with Israel. America wants to get the Muslim world to go against Russia, to go against China. So you would need Indonesia, Malaysia, two massive countries with huge populations. Indonesia is the most populated Muslim country in the world. It has a massive military, a lot of manpower. It has a pretty effective military. And Indonesia hates Israel. Indonesia is not going to go unite with other Muslim countries under Jerusalem. But Indonesia sure as hell would join its fellow Muslim countries under Turkey. Also, you have to keep in mind Central Asia. Turkey is the most powerful of the Turkic-speaking countries. And so with Turkey, you can unite all of the Turkic countries against China and Russia. If you look at a map, if you look at a map of Central Asia, you will see, you'll see Turkey is here, and then bordering with Turkey is Iran, and then from Iran, you go right into Central Asia. So Central Asia is not that far away from Turkey. How do you think the Turks were able to invade Byzantium? They just went from Turkestan into Iran, and then from there into Anatolia, where they would begin their vanquishing of the Byzantine Empire. But it's really an unfettered chain from Turkey into Central Asia. Central Asia shares a massive border with both Russia and China. So, for example, you have Kazakhstan. Kazakhstan shares a huge border with Russia. It also shares a border with China. And so you could use Central Asia against America's biggest enemies, Russia and China. Well, how would you do that with Israel? You can't do that. The Muslim world in Central Asia is not interested in fighting a war for the cause of Israel. But if they see this rising Turkey, which speaks a language that is very similar to the language spoke by the Kazakhs and by the Uzbeks and by the Uyghurs in northwestern China, these people would happily join forces with the Turkish military to fight a grand jihad against the Chinese and against the Russians. The Turkish government has been pushing this propaganda that China is anti-Muslim, that China persecutes Turkic Muslims in the northwestern Chinese province of Xinjiang. And Turkey is using this to try to rile up the Uyghur Turks within China to protest or really to revolt against Beijing. NATO wants this in order to destabilize China. And so the goal is to get these Turkic people in northwestern China to destabilize China, effectively causing a civil war within China to weaken America's biggest economic rival, that is China. And within this same goal, there is this agenda to get the Turkic nations of Central Asia, Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, and Uzbekistan to unite under Ankara. And that would form a massive military force that could be used as a proxy against America's rivals. And there is an endless supply of extremely important and vital resources in Central Asia. We're talking oil, natural gas, uranium, that could then be transported through Turkey into the rest of Europe. So Turkey could become a massive pipeline for Central Asian oil and natural gas to transport into the rest of Europe from Turkey. You don't get that with Israel. So with Turkey, you get a massive package. You get the entire Islamic world on your side. You get the entire Turkic world on your side. You get the Central Asian countries on your side. You get Eurasia on your side. You can't beat that. But you can't get that with Israel. So America is saying, okay, sorry, Israel, make way for the Turkish Empire. Israel is complaining. Israel is crying. Israel is remonstrancing. But America doesn't care. Hence why America just threw the Kurds under the bus. America threw the Kurds under the bus so as to enable Turkish expansionism within Syria. And Israel is watching this whole thing happening, and they're saying, oh my God, we could be next. And, well, it really is something that bespeaks what the future holds for Israel. And that is its end. And that's the bottom line. Anyway, you guys just heard some Theo Logi. God bless.